and we come to Saturday Night Theatre.
The Doubting Thomases by Mike Stott. With Alan Downer, Caroline John, Margot Boyd, and Jeffrey Beavers. The Doubting Thomases.
Not quite so rough, Mr. Lambert. Just gently does it, slow but sure. Yes?
Like that?
That's more like it. I think you would find an old toothbrush would serve you very well for the fiddly bits. Oh. However, you do have enthusiasm, that's the main thing. And now, I'm just going to clean your skull a little.
Excuse me, could you tell me where I can find Dr. Hartley, please?
You found her, dear? Me?
Oh. Dr. Hartley, I'm Sue Rogers.
Pleased to meet you, dear. We need all the volunteers we can get. But I do hope you brought your own trowel. And I was just telling
you... No, Dr. Hartley, I'm Sue Rogers from the BBC.
Oh, well, never mind.
Hello.
What can I do for you?
I was wondering if I could have an interview with you for the local news spot.
Oh, yes. Why, certainly. About the site?
Yes.
Right. Well, where are the cameras?
No, this is radio. Just this little recorder and the mic.
Oh. Oh, well, go on then, ask your questions, dear.
Well, you see, before we actually tape anything, could you just fill me in on the background first?
Fill you in? Well, I can show you round.
Fine, fine.
Come along then. We'll start over here.
Oh,
careful how you go. You see, the original Hannah Cliff. I say original, I mean in the period I'm concerned with, say about 1,500 years ago. The cliff edge was then probably half a mile or even a mile further west, out there. This whole coastline has been eaten away by the sea. That's how we found this site in the first place. Something like, 30 or 40 yards of land at the edge of the cliff just fell into the sea and left about half the original site behind uncovered. The entire site will fall away into the sea sooner or later.
So you don't have time to conduct a proper excavation?
No, I'm afraid we don't. We're having to concentrate just on certain sections of the site. And even so, the sea will probably win in the end. It's a great shame.
Yes. Now, well, frankly, Dr. Hartley, I don't know all that much about archaeology, but what exactly is it about this site that makes it important?
Oh, it's important for us locally because it's here. It's part of our past. But over and above that, it does seem to be a site which was occupied very possibly continuously from the time of the Roman invasion and settlement right down to, well, around the middle of the 7th century.
Oh.
Now, unfortunately, the villa itself has been lost in the latest collapse of the cliff. But here, where we are digging at the moment, here's the really exciting area. It's a burial vault. Romano-British, with here, built against it, a small burial mound, which might well be the result of a small pile of bodies being hurriedly buried after the villa itself was burned, about the middle of the 7th century.
You mean it was attacked and burned?
Yes, but very late, you see. I mean, just imagine, dear, the descendants of Imperial Roman officers, settlers, could have been living here as late as 250 years after the fall of Rome, here, on the northwest coast of England.
Yes. What about the burial vault itself? Have you found any treasure?
No, we've only just started. But that's not what we're really interested in, you see. We want knowledge, not treasure.
Mm. What about the people who attacked and destroyed the place, then? Who were they?
Oh, goodness knows. Celts, local tribes, Saxons, we really don't know. But there was quite a fight here, that we're sure of. You see this?
What is it?
It's a human vertebrae. With there, the arrowhead still embedded in it.
Yeah.
Grizzly, eh?
Mm.
Oh, look at this. Only found this morning. So we haven't cleared it up yet. But that was found actually in the entrance to the vault.
A skull?
Yes, a young man's skull, we think. You see that? Split almost in two, probably by an axe.
Oh, very nasty.
Yes. I'm afraid life was rather cheap round here in those days.
Right. Well then, Dr. Hartley, shall we do the interview now?
Yes, I'm ready, dear. What do I have to do?
Oh, I'll just ask you the same kind of questions again and you just give me the same answers.
Oh, all right.
I'll just do a little intro first. This is Sue Rogers from the very edge of the terrifying Hannah Cliff, just outside Hannaford. The sea is beating against the rocks below me, while up here on the cliff top, a small windswept team of devoted and rugged volunteers battles against time and the ocean itself to solve the mysteries and secrets of this ancient site of treasure and destruction, which now faces its final threat, perched as it is so perilously close to the overhanging edge of the constantly crumbling cliff. The leader of these dedicated and determined archaeologists is a tiny, bespectacled lady, Dr. Eva Hartley. Dr. Hartley is a world expert on that little understood but deeply fascinating period of blood feuds, massacres, and the everlasting struggle for power that is part of our heritage, the Dark Ages. Dr. Hartley, I understand this entire site is just about ready to topple into the sea at any moment.
Well, more or less.
Now, among the very latest finds here on the Hannah Cliff is a truly hair-raising piece of human evidence. A human skull split almost in two by a mighty blow. Real physical evidence of the lifestyle of our ancestors, isn't it, Doctor?
Oh, now look, dear, I can't... Good gracious. Good heavens above.
What is it?
Mr. Lambert, will you come here?
Coming.
Well, you could knock me down with a feather duster, really you could.
Dr. Hartley, what is it? What's wrong?
What is it? What's the problem?
The skull, my dears, the skull.
The skull?
What about it?
The teeth. Look, the teeth. That tooth.
I don't... Oh.
Oh, yes. Oh, Lord.
Oh, yes, I didn't notice it and you didn't notice it.
But, Dr. Hartley, what does it mean?
Well, dear... The very least it means is that this is the skull of someone who was a good deal closer to us than an ancient Roman, or a Celt, or a Saxon.
But didn't they have filling?
No, they did not. They did not.
They had toothache.
Well, quite a headache, eh?
Sir, I
what
found...
What were you doing up here, Tony?
I was helping. I'm interested in archaeology, and I was off duty.
Who actually found this thing, Dr. Hartley?
I did.
Oh, and you didn't notice the filling? You were Detective Constable.
Well, I wasn't on duty, was I? I was looking for 7th century remains. I wasn't looking for examples of modern dentistry.
All right, Tony. Matter of fact, I almost wish nobody had noticed. It's going to be a nuisance, this. Where was it found?
Down here. There.
Hmm. And you haven't found the rest of the skeleton yet?
It's probably still buried in here, in the vault.
Vault? Dr. Hartley, what exactly is this place?
Well, from here back to there is a Romano-British burial chamber or vault.
Uh-huh.
And here was a burial mound dating from the destruction of the villa, which used to be over there.
Yeah, so a 20th century skull, and presumably the body it belonged to, was in the middle of a burial vault that was something to do with the Romans.
Not in the middle of the vault, actually. Just inside the entrance area.
Interesting. Now, I'll have to take the skull down to our laboratories, but I'm going to have to interfere with your work here, I'm afraid.
We won't have to stop, will we?
No, just the opposite. I'll send you half a dozen men to help sift right through this area. They'll be under your control, Doctor, with Detective Constable Lambert here as coordinator. Oh. We're looking for different things, but I think our methods are compatible. There shouldn't be any clash of interests, I hope.
Thank you, Mr. Smith.
Just one word of warning, though. Keep a check on Lambert here. It seems when he's looking for old bones, he doesn't pay much attention to new ones. Now he's officially looking for new bones, he might not notice a hoard of Roman treasure.
Oh, come on.
See you. Bye.
Mr. Smith?
Yeah.
What about me?
What about you?
I'm Sue Rogers from the BBC.
Oh, that's awkward. And how much do you know?
I've got everything that's happened so far down on tape.
Well, that's even more awkward.
How about a deal?
Huh?
I won't use any of my material without your permission, if you'll let me come along with you. To watch, maybe to help. Huh?
It's against the rules.
And I won't even carry a tape recorder or a notepad. I'll just watch. Then I can maybe do a feature about this afterwards. Go on. I was in at the start, and I would like to be in at the end.
Ah, come on, then. The car's down there.
You agree?
On the conditions stated, yes. Well, come on, I've got a skull to deliver.
Right. Hey, just a minute.
What?
Did you say yes because... Well, just because I'm a woman?
No, because you're a young woman and a lovely one.
Male chauvinist. Is it always like this?
Yeah, most of the time.
Seriously, do we just sit and wait?
We do. Or at least I do. You're free to leave. But I wait and wait and wait. It's a large part of my job, the ability to sit and wait. Or stand and wait. They also serve, you know.
Do you enjoy your job?
Yeah, do you?
Oh, my job, yes. But why are you here? Wouldn't you stand far more chance of promotion in the city? Or the regional crime squad?
Yes.
Well?
Well, I don't really want promotion. I asked to work here. I worked in the regional crime squad, and I asked to come here.
Why?
Oh, fresh air, etc., you know?
No, I don't know.
Good.
Do you mind me asking questions?
I prefer conversation to interrogation.
Oh, it's just I've never really talked to a policeman before.
Oh, well, I've never talked to a... what you call it? A media person before.
Have you heard me on the radio?
Uh-huh.
Oh, you're not impressed.
Well, I don't know, you all seem to talk as if you're sitting on a bomb.
Oh, you do like the sarcasm, don't you? Are you married? Must be awful being married to a man like you.
No comment.
Huh. Is Dr. Willoughby always so slow?
He's not slow, he's thorough.
Did I put my foot in it asking if you were married? I'm sorry,
look, I'm 37 years old, 6 feet dead, brown eyes, brown hair, no distinguishing features except a moustache I'm thinking of shaving off, and that's all, that's me. And I'm not married because my wife divorced me and we had no kids. And I moved here because she worked near where I worked and I didn't want to be near her anymore. And I do have hobbies but no pets, all right?
I'm sorry, I'm just nosy. It's just the sitting waiting, I'm sorry. Did she leave you for someone else or was it you? Don't answer, don't answer.
There were no nobody else's. She divorced me because she was bored to death being married to me by mutual consent.
Look, I didn't mean you were a...
Here we are, John.
Ah.
One skull, quite a headache, eh? You've heard that one before, haven't you?
Yes, I have. Now tell me something I haven't heard.
Well, death would have been virtually instantaneous, assuming he was alive when struck. It was a single heavy blow with a sharp heavy weapon, probably an axe.
And?
And it's the skull of a young male, a boy, aged about 14 years. He had one filling, as noted, plus two extractions of the lower left jaw. There's his dental chart.
Oh, thanks, Willoughby. Now, the important question, how long has he been dead? Because if this is some Victorian or Edwardian killing...
Oh, no, no, it's more recent than that. Post-World War II.
Strontium 90?
Yes. Yeah. He was alive in 45. He was dead before, 66. Decomposition is complete.
So, 21 years?
Yes. Of course, I'll be able to pinpoint it more accurately if you find the rest of the skeleton. And perhaps some fragments of clothes. Oh, and the skeleton ought to be close to where the skull was found. Yeah. I mean, he wasn't bearded.
So it's recent enough to be solvable.
In theory, yes. And good luck, too. I don't envy you the job, but I do envy you your new assistant.
Oh.
If you ever feel like popping down to where the real work gets done, love, I've got all kinds of weird and wonderful things to show you. So don't be shy. Bye.
He winked at me.
Oh, it's an occupational hazard with pathologists. They need the light's relief.
Oh. Anyway, what was that about strontium 90?
Oh, well, that's what this boy has in common with you and me. Everyone lucky enough to be alive since 1945 has strontium 90 in their bones. All I have to do is fit in the missing details, such as who he was when he was killed, why, and who by. All the rest is done for me.
Where'd you start?
Well, with two things. A list of all boys aged between 12 and 16 who disappeared in the British Isles between 1945 and 1966. I phone a computer for that, and then I wait for it to come back to me. And this, the dental chart or picture, he had two teeth out and one filling, so he had a dentist. So I get copies of this, and then try to find the dentist of every boy on the missing list, and I hope one of them will recognise it, starting locally, but well, it might involve a dentist in Aberdeen, or even Australia. Dentists do emigrate, you see,
yeah.
And they die too, which doesn't help, and sometimes they lose their old files. Anyway, the point is, for the moment, I just make a couple of phone calls, and then I wait, and wait, and wait, and wait.
Oh, Lord. Is there a coffee machine here?
I thought you'd never ask. The canteen's down the corridor on the left. Black with no sugar for me, please.
Okay. And I'm sorry if I upset you before.
I forgive you if you get me a donut, too, if they're fresh.
Okay.
Some of the donuts in this place have been here longer than I have.
Finished. Isn't it frightening? I never realized how many people just vanished.
Oh, this is only a small sample. Of course, most of the adults run away, but anyway, how many have you found?
Same as you, only two who are really local.
Right, plus that Stevenson kid who was on holiday in Blackpool, 1948. He was nearly 17, but still, I'll phone Leeds about that. Meanwhile, we've got David James Clark, last address 12 Trafalgar Street, 1964. He was 15, and Philip John Benton, 14, last address the Limes, Cumberland Avenue. Not seen since 10th of July, 1953.
Which one do we start with?
Oh, we take the nearest, shall we? David James Clark.
Yes? What do you want?
Oh, I'd like to speak to Mrs. Clark, if that's possible.
Yeah, that's me. What do you want?
You're the mother of David James Clark?
Yes.
Well, now, Mrs. Clark, I wonder if you can remember who your son's dentist was.
You what?
Your son's dentist.
Same as mine, Mr. Crabtree on Inkley Road. Why? Is he in trouble?
Who, Mr. Crabtree?
No, silly, our Dave.
Mrs. Clark, I thought your son was missing since 1964.
Oh, yes. He was. He ran away to London.
So he's not really missing at all?
No. He writes every Christmas. And they get a birthday card, too.
Good afternoon, Mrs. Clark.
Ta-ra. What was it about, anyway? Oh, well, don't tell anybody anything, then.
But what a stupid woman.
Yeah. Still, it's people like that who make sure computers are only human. Oh, well. Turn left at the roundabout.
Okay.
Cumberland Avenue is the second on the right. Let's just hope Mrs. Benton has been as lucky as Mrs. Clark.
I'm afraid my wife's dead, Mr. Smith.
Oh, I'm sorry, sir. Well, perhaps you can help us.
She couldn't take the strain, you see. Philip was our only child, and it wasn't just that we lost him. It was not knowing if he was dead or alive. Never knowing for sure. I'm afraid it was too much for Margaret. She took an overdose of her sleeping pills.
I'm sorry, Mr. Benton. Now, I know it's been a long time, but I wonder if you can recall the name of your son's dentist.
Dentist? Why, me?
Pardon?
I was a dentist. I'm retired now, but I treated Philip myself.
Ah. Well, would you look at this dental chart, please, Mr. Benton? See if you can recognise it. It might match your son's record in your files. Mr. Benton?
Yes.
Yes?
Yes. It is. Philip. My God. After all these years. After 20 years. Oh, I'm sorry.
Are you going to be all right?
Yes, it's... It's just that... if only Margaret could have... Still. What is? Oh, what are you going to do about it?
Well, there'll be a full investigation, Mr. Benton. It'll be difficult after all this time, but we may still find who did it.
Who did it? It was murder?
Yes, it was.
Oh. It's been so long. I don't want revenge because of Philip anymore. It's not so much his death, it's those years and years of uncertainty. And what that did to my wife, So, because of that, I hope you can find whoever tortured my wife and myself for so long. Yeah.
Well, I'll... there's nothing more I can do at the moment. Except to promise you I'll do my level best to find whoever did this. To your son. And to you. And your wife. Thank you. Well, there's not much in the file, is there?
No, nobody seems to have had any idea what happened at the time.
No worries at home, no problems at school. A happy, normal, intelligent kid, good at sport, good in class. Looking forward to his first holiday abroad with his parents, and then he vanished. Had lunch at home, left to go to a cricket match in Hannaford, never seen again. Didn't meet his friends as arranged, and he most likely never went to the match at all.
And most of the material's irrelevant anyway now. Most of it's about them looking for him. Rumours. People thinking they'd seen him. Well, all irrelevant now.
Yeah. He was probably killed the same day he disappeared. Saturday the 10th of July, 1953, which doesn't give us much to go on, does it? Apart from interviewing his friends again.
But they were all interviewed then. They were all at the cricket match.
I know. And the logical conclusion is that he was just the victim of some maniac, possibly even a sex maniac.
Except that he was found inside an ancient burial vault.
Yeah, exactly. That's the only thing we know that the officers investigating at the time didn't know. The question is, why? Yeah, come in. Oh, Tony, Dr. Hartley, come in, sit down.
Found the rest of the body, the skeleton.
Are you sure?
Pretty well. Willoughby's going over it now, but he seemed to think it was pretty definite. So did Dr. Hartley.
Yes. We've finished for tonight, but we'll start again at first light tomorrow.
Good. I'll leave the six officers with you, Dr. Hartley, just in case.
Thank you. They're a great help. Oh, this is quite dreadful, isn't it?
Yes.
Did you find anything else in the vault?
Yes, a sarcophagus. The boy was lying by the side of it. It's a fairly rough-cut stone thing, not very handsome. And inside there are what seem to be the remains of four or possibly five different people.
They're old bones, I hope.
Oh, no. They're certainly ancient. But you see, Mr. Smith, there's still a bit of a puzzle.
Oh, why?
It's quite a small sarcophagus, big enough for one body. So it appears that the other remains were put in there as skeletons, piled in rather than buried.
Did you find any things with them? Burial objects? Treasure?
That's a rather strange thing. We found nothing. Just bones.
You mean it's been emptied? Somebody's been there before you?
We can't be certain yet, of course, but it does appear possible.
There's another thing, John. Where the boy's skeleton was, we didn't find any trace of clothes. Oh. Not even buttons or a zip or shoes.
So he was naked?
Yes. And normally you might think a sex killing. But if he was 14, well, I think he took his clothes off to wriggle in there to keep them clean.
Yeah.
I don't think the clothes were removed just to prevent identification, because I don't think the murderer ever expected the body to be found, let alone identified. I think he crawled in, naked, with the idea of washing when he came out, probably in the sea, and then getting dressed again in nice clean clothes so that nobody would be able to tell where he'd been.
Only he never did come out.
No. And the murderer probably got rid of the clothes somewhere else. Buried them or burned them or something. That wouldn't be difficult.
No, he was only wearing sandals and shorts and a light summer shirt.
You mean, you think he was a tomb robber?
Well, I think he found that site, and he found a crack or a small hole in the entrance, probably opened up by some subsidence, and so he dug it out a bit, crawled inside, and...
What?
Well, took whatever he found there.
And then he was killed because of what he found. He was robbed too, you mean? And maybe he found a whole treasure hoard.
Well, maybe.
We can't say what might have been in that vault. We can't even be sure that it had been robbed until we've opened the whole thing up.
It doesn't have to be treasure, you know, Sue. People kill each other for very small amounts of money. People even commit murder just because they don't like somebody.
Not in a Romano British burial vault, they don't.
All right, let's call it a day, shall we? How about a meal? Have you two eaten yet?
No, and I only had a sandwich for lunch.
We'll join you.
Good. Sue, you're going to eat?
Yes, sir. Can I use your phone first? I'll catch you up.
Okay. See you.
After you.
BBC, good evening.
Can I speak to Mr. Latchmere, please? He's probably in the control room, in B2. Hughie?
Yes. Is that my favourite lady?
I don't know about that, but it is Sue Rogers. And I want to ask you a favour.
For you, love, anything.
Well, first, look, can you tell Simon I won't be in tomorrow? Tell him I've got flu or something.
That'll please him. Is that the favour?
No, no, Hughie. I know you're a technical genius.
Oh, flattery.
So, I'll tell you what I need, and I need it for tomorrow morning.
Yeah. Number 27. Yeah, that's out on the new estate, isn't it? Uh-huh. And, oh, hang on, Bill. Come in. Oh, good morning.
Hello. Sorry I'm late. Got stuck in the traffic.
Be with you in a sec. Bill, sorry about that. Go on. Andrew Donnelly. Yeah, that's the last one. Yeah. Yeah, right. Well, thanks very much. Bye. Right, then. The menu for today. Graham Rees, Graham Appleby, David Fielding and Andrew Donnelly.
Philip Benton's friends?
Yeah, minus Keith Potter. He was killed in a car accident end of last year, but the other four are alive and well and living quite near. So, let's go and give them the news about Philip Benton, see how they react.
But that's terrible, terrible.
Well, you must have thought he was dead, didn't you?
Yes, but not murdered.
Uh-huh. Mr. Rees, you were a close friend of his, weren't you?
Oh, yes, quite close. We lived near each other, and we were in the same form at St. Thomas's. Yes, quite friendly.
And the others, you all went round together, didn't you?
Yes, Phil and me, and Dave Fielding, yeah. And Andy Donnelly, uh-huh. And Graham Appleby, Keith Potter.
And when did you start going up on the Hannah Cliff?
We didn't.
Not at all?
No. Well, I didn't.
Oh. What about the others? Do you keep in touch with them? Are you still close friends?
Oh, you know, not really. We've drifted apart. Different jobs, different friends, you know, we grew up.
Right. Well, thanks, Mr. Rees.
Not at all. If there's anything else I can do to help, you are investigating it, are you?
Oh, yes. It is a murder case.
Yes. Well, what a terrible thing.
Three down, one to go. What do you think so far?
Well, they all seem a bit taken aback, but a bit nervous, aren't they?
Yeah, they are, aren't they?
And they're all virtually pretending they hardly know where the Hannahcliff is. Well, it's only a couple of miles away. And they don't seem shocked so much as scared. Certainly nervous.
And Rees says it's terrible, and Fielding says it's terrible, and Donnelly says it's dreadful. I wonder what Appleby will say.
Detective Sergeant, is this absolutely definite?
Well, it's definitely Philip Benton, sir, and it's definitely murder.
Joyce, would you switch? Would you leave us alone, please? Joyce! Joyce, would you do the other rooms first, please?
Oh, yes, Mr. Appleby.
That's better. Can I speak to you in confidence?
Oh, I think Miss Rogers here is quite trustworthy, sir.
Oh, thank you.
Well, first of all, I must say I'm not entirely surprised by what you've told me.
Oh?
I mean, there was something going on before Philip vanished. And I'm only sorry I didn't have the nerve to speak up at the time.
There's something going on? What?
Oh, I don't know exactly, but... Well, you know we were a group, the six of us.
Yeah.
I suppose we were what you call a gang, in a quiet way. We called ourselves the Doubters.
Doubters?
Yeah. We were all at St. Thomas's, you see, and well, we didn't think much of it as a school. In fact, it's a very good school, but a bit dull, what we thought. They got you through the necessary exams, but we didn't think that was what education should be about.
Uh-huh.
We wanted something more exciting. So we were known as the Doubting Thomases. I think Potter suggested it first.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, we all took it up. The Doubting Thomases are just the Doubters, we call ourselves. Used to sign letters. Used doubtfully. That kind of thing. It was all quite innocuous, really.
Yeah.
And then, after a while, it started to wear out. The joke. We spent a couple of terms all tormenting the masters by sticking up our hands and saying, I doubt that, sir. And if you were asked a question, you didn't say, I don't know. You said, I'm doubtful of the answer. Oh, silly games like that. And we all dodged classes together. Thought we could teach ourselves better than we were being taught. So it went on for a while. But naturally enough, it wore out. We were growing out of it. Different interests, girls, you know. We wanted to be more individuals and less just members of a group, a gang.
Uh-huh.
We got bored with always doing everything together. Well, I did anyway. But the first to actually leave the group was Phil Benton.
Oh.
And Potter, who was the founder, in a way, the leader, at least that's what he liked to think. Yeah. Potter tried to stop Phil leaving. He tried to hold us all together, and then when Phil wouldn't do what he told him, Potter told us all to ignore him, not speak to him, pretend we couldn't even see him. Oh, you know the kind of things kids do.
Yeah.
Well, we went along with it. Oh. It was pretty stupid and spineless of us, but, well, kids are cruel.
Aye.
And we kept it up for, a week or more. And then Phil disappeared.
I see.
Oh, you can imagine what that did to the rest of us. Mm. The police came to our homes asking questions. We were scared. And we were ashamed. So we didn't tell them about how we treated Phil, but it really broke the gang up completely. You see, at first we thought Phil had just run away because he was upset, but then, well, he didn't come back.
No.
And I think we all knew something serious had happened to him. I certainly thought he'd killed himself, frankly. I couldn't understand why he wasn't found, but then I remembered how he used to spend a lot of time walking on the cliffs after he dropped out of the Doubters.
Yeah.
So I thought he might very well have jumped off the cliffs and his body been washed out to sea. But anyway, we all felt very guilty, you see.
Mm.
That's why we stopped being friends. I mean, even now we say hello if we meet in the street or a pub somewhere, but we don't look each other in the eyes. Because we all felt we were to blame, in a way.
And now?
I'm still ashamed of myself for the way I behaved towards Phil and for the way I kept quiet afterwards, although now it turns out he didn't kill himself at all. But it was even worse than I'd imagined. Ah. Well, I don't know what to think. But still, I behaved badly and I'm ashamed of that.
Well, thank you for being so frank, Mr. Appleby. I won't take any more of your time at the moment. It's all early days.
What about asking
him? Thank you, Miss Rogers. I haven't forgotten. Mr. Appleby, I must ask you not to mention this conversation to anybody, please.
Certainly, certainly.
Right. Well, thanks again.
Not at all. I'm only sorry I didn't have the courage to tell the truth at the time.
Better late than never, Mr. Appleby. Good morning. We'll see ourselves out. Miss Rogers.
I'm coming. You never asked him about the burial vault.
That's right, I didn't.
Why not? You asked the others.
Aye, and they all denied knowing anything about it. And it made him nervous. But Appleby wasn't nervous, and I didn't want to disturb him.
It'd take a lot more than that to disturb him. He was a lot too calm, I thought.
Didn't you like him?
I didn't like him, and I didn't believe him, and I wouldn't trust him further than I could see him on a dark night.
Oh, I wonder why not. And him being so frank.
Aren't you coming?
Eh? No. You go on ahead. I'll catch you up. I want to make a radio call.
Oh, a secret affair.
Uh-huh.
Oh, well, suit yourself. Oh, I won't need my bag, will I? See you in a minute, then.
Uh-huh. Alpha Orange 1, Alpha Orange 1.
Come in, Alpha Orange 1.
I have a message for Detective Inspector Waters.
Go ahead, sir.
Message reads: require complete check on the following: Graham Reese, Graham Appleby, David Fielding, Andrew Donnelly. That's two L's and two N's. Repeat, complete check. background, careers, financial situation, social life. Got that?
Yes, sir.
I also want a complete check on Keith Potter up to his death last year. That's all. Okay.
Yes, sir. It'll go straight to Detective Inspector Waters' department now, sir.
Fine. Thank you. Out. Now, let's have a look what's in Sue's little bag. Well, well, well. A little recorder.
David Fielding, Andrew Donnelly. That's two L's and two N's. Repeat. Complete. Check. Back to...
Oh, you see, Smith. You forgot the 11th commandment. Thou shalt not trust a journalist. Especially not a pretty one. Hello? Anyone at home?
Oh, come in, Mr. Smith. Can you manage?
I just in time for a drop of Romano British coffee, eh?
Yes, we were just taking a break, showing Miss Rogers the results of our labours.
Black? Please, Donny, no sugar. So, what is the result, Dr. Hartley?
Oh, from my point of view, a great disappointment, I'm afraid.
And from my point of view?
Interesting. There you are.
Oh, thanks. Oh, well, let's start with a disappointment.
Oh, that's simple. We haven't found anything.
What? No burial objects? No treasures?
Nothing but bones. And they've been moved. We uncovered three more sarcophagi, all empty. Their contents have just been tipped into the one near the entrance. So we're not going to gain much knowledge at all about the people who lived and died here. Old Walter's been spoiled from an archaeological point of view.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, Tony, what's the consolation for us then?
Just what Dr. Hartley said.
Huh?
The fact that somebody emptied the place. And the only thing left behind when the entrance tunnel was sealed up again was Philip Benton's body.
Idea being that if what was taken away was not very valuable, why take it?
And why kill for it? Because I can't believe that Benton's body being found in this particular place is just a coincidence.
I agree. There is a treasure. Or there was, anyway.
Okay. Anyway, the police job is finished here, yes, Dr. Hartley?
Yes. You can put your nice policeman back to being policeman again.
Right. Well, now let's see what we've got so far.
Should I leave you alone?
Oh, no. You stay, Dr. Hartley, please. This involves you. Whatever was taken from here is important for you, too. And, anyway, I might have a need for you later.
Oh, well.
Now, in the situation. First, we've got very little to go on. It's 20 years too late for fingerprints, bloodstains, finding the weapon, all that. We're not going to be able to work out what happened from concrete evidence and clues. So, we have five prime suspects, and one of them is dead himself, Potter, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, Detective Inspector Waters has put some of his men on to doing a general check on all five, and, we must hope to see things a little bit more clearly when we get his reports. But at the moment, what do we know? A burial vault has been robbed. Mm. The skeleton of a boy who vanished in 1953 found inside it. Now, the vault could have been robbed any time in the last...
1200 to 1300 years.
Thanks. But the probability is that it was only found and robbed in 1953 by Philip Benton or by somebody else, or by somebody else and Philip Benton.
And that somebody else was greedy enough to take all the treasure for himself and kill Philip Benton in order to do it.
Well, that's assuming there was a treasure, but... Actually, Sue would go further than that. You'd say that somebody else was Graham Appleby, wouldn't you, Sue?
Well, yes, I would.
Any reason? Beyond feminine intuition?
Look, I know I didn't like him, but I didn't like him because I didn't believe him. He was lying. Well, those hints about Keith Potter, he went right to the edge of saying Keith Potter hated Philip Benton and that if anybody killed him, it must have been Potter. That was what he was implying, wasn't it?
I should explain. They had a kind of gang called the Doubting Thomases.
Really?
Yeah, now, according to Appleby, Potter was the leader, and Philip Benton left the gang, and Potter hated him for it.
And I just think Appleby was trying a pretty crude trick.
Yep, I agree, sir. It was a crude tactic. But look at it this way. The suggested motive. Hatred. Revenge. Now, it's as obvious and blind as the fact that Potter is the one member of the Doubting Thomases who can't answer back and give his version of things because he's dead.
Mm-hmm.
And yet this really blatant and obvious little story comes from the calmest and cleverest of the four survivors of the Doubting Thomases. Mm. Well, you see, I think you underestimate Appleby, Sue.
I don't understand. You mean... What do you mean?
I'm not exactly with you either.
No, nor am I.
Well, look, the other three.
Yes?
Reese, Fielding and Donnelly. Now, if Appleby killed Philip Benton and got the treasure, well, wouldn't you expect them to be pretty angry if they knew what had happened? But in fact, they're nervous, scared men. I asked each one of them about the Hannah Cliff, and each one of them said he'd never been there and wasn't even sure where it was. Now, I didn't ask Appleby, because I didn't have to. He himself dropped a very clear hint that he knew that what happened to Philip Benton was something to do with the Hannah Cliff, with this place. Now, what he actually said was, you don't mind if I play your tape for Tony and Dr. Hartley, do you, Sue?
That's my bag.
Yeah, and this is your little tape recorder inside it.
You, that's just plain
daylight. Breaking a promise, Sue. You promised no tricks. Well, fortunately, you didn't handle it very well. The whole morning you've been turning that bag towards whoever was speaking. And then leaving it with me in the car.
I suppose I'd better go.
Oh, sit down. Don't sulk. Oh. It's a useful little toy, this. Now, where was it?
Serious, it happened. And I think...
This is it. Listen carefully.
Serious, it happened. I certainly thought he'd killed himself, frankly. I couldn't understand why he wasn't found, but... Then I remembered how he used to spend a lot of time walking on the cliffs after he dropped out of the doubters, so... I thought he might very well have jumped off the cliffs and his body just been washed out to sea. But anyway, we...
So?
So what?
So, didn't you spot the deliberate mistake?
No.
Neither did I.
Well, Appleby said, Philip Benton spent a lot of time walking on the cliffs, and he also said, after he dropped out of the doubters.
Yes, so?
So he'd already said they were all ignoring Philip Benton. They'd sent him to Coventry. So?
So how did he know Benton spent his time walking on the cliffs?
Exactly. How did he know anything Philip Benton did after Philip had left the doubters?
Well,
and the only answer is, he knew because they were not ignoring Philip Benton at all. They were doing just the opposite. They were following him.
But you said Appleby made a deliberate mistake.
Yes, I did. Appleby's cunning. Clever. Clever enough not to make mistakes without a reason. Clever enough to know I wouldn't believe him. And clever enough to use that fact. You see, I think Appleby's trying to use us. To tempt us to do something.
But what?
Well, at a guess, I'd say he wants us to bring this whole situation to a boil. After all this happened 20 years ago. 20 years. And yet, after all this time, Reese and Fielding and Donnelly are still nervous. They're defensive.
Whereas Appleby doesn't seem at all defensive.
No, quite the opposite. But if they're defensive, they must have a reason. That they must have something to defend and against somebody. So I think Mr. Appleby is trying to use us, the police, to open up their defences, to do what he apparently hasn't been able to do, to make them defenceless. And I think we ought to oblige him. Let him use us for a while.
Oh, yes. I mean, I don't quite understand what you're talking about.
No, nor do I.
Well, I'm not absolutely certain yet either. And I'm not sure how yet, what he wants us to do, but... Well, there are things we can do to be ready. Now, we'll have to wait for Waters' report, but one thing you can do now, Tony.
Yes?
Waters' men are checking Keith Potter's life. Now, I want you to check his death. Go through the coroner's report, the hearing. It's a fairly high mortality rate the Doubting Thomases have suffered, after all. 2 out of 6 dead before the 35.
Yes. All right, I'll do it now. Bye.
So long. Dr. Hartley.
Yes. Now, what can I do?
For the moment, nothing. But could you be near a phone this evening, say, after 8?
I'll be at home, then. 2557.
Good. 2557. Thank you. I'll explain things more clearly then.
Right. Oh, meaning you want to be left alone now, you two?
Please.
Right. Well, I'm off.
So, I'm thoroughly shamed, aren't I?
No. You should be, but you're not. You're just irritated at being found out.
Well...
Sue, have you got a jealous boyfriend?
What?
Have you?
No, I haven't got anybody at the moment,
Good.
But even if
now
I had
listen.
It...
Now, you used the fact that you're a beautiful girl, and I obviously fancied you more than slightly, to get in on this in the first place. And then you promised me you wouldn't cheat, and then you do cheat. You're rather a sneaky lady.
Now, look,
you... It's all right, sir. We have a real need of a sneaky lady. Remember what I said? We've got no chance of sorting this out just by good routine detection. And what we're faced with is an old, fixed situation. Which Appleby seems to want us to shake up a bit. And we have to oblige him if we're to stand any chance of settling the case. Now, Appleby's tricky. He cheats. So, we cheat back. And on the old principle, it takes one to catch one. You see, you're not as unlike Graham Appleby as you might think. You're both not entirely trustworthy. So really, you shouldn't dislike him. I think if you tried, you could get to be quite good friends. Well, friendly enough for you to tell him you've had a bust-up with me and what a pompous ass I am, and maybe even whisper a few secrets about my plans. Hints, you know, he likes hints. Do you think you're sneaky enough for that, Sue?
I might be sneaky, but you... You... Oh, words fail me.
Oh, now, from what I've heard of you on the radio, I'd say it was you who failed the words.
You nasty, grotty, flat-footed...
Tell me, tell
my God, I understand how your wife got to hate you.
No, she didn't hate me. She was bored with me. You see, I was a nicer and duller man in those days. Youth, you know.
Yes, well, we all changed.
I wouldn't have dreamed of having an affair with a beautiful, sneaky bird like you in those days.
What?
Well, that's what I dreamt about last night.
Me?
You. It seemed like a good idea at the time. Will you do it, Sue? Will you take Appleby out for dinner and tell him nasty tales about me?
With pleasure. With real pleasure.
Smith? Oh, Bill, yeah. Yeah. I was just going to ring you. I just finished reading them. They're marvellous. No, really marvellous. I know, yeah. Listen, Bill, it's just what I needed. Yeah, and thanks very much. And tell your fellas thanks from me too, will you? And buy them a drink on me, and you too. No, afraid not. I've got a late night ahead. Yeah. Well, see you. And again, thanks, eh?
Oh,
Tony, sit down. Take the weight off your mind.
Oh, that's better. It's my back. It's that digging yesterday and this morning. It's hard work being an archaeologist, you know?
Oh, I do sympathise, Tony, but...
I know. You can relax. I think you were right.
Potter was killed.
Manslaughter by person or persons unknown. No witnesses.
He didn't crash into anybody else?
He didn't crash at all. He was hit by a passing car. Listen, I copied this down. It's his wife, widow, giving evidence at the inquest. She said, I got this call about 5 o'clock. Keith was still at work. It was about the advert, the car. And this man who phoned, he said he thought he might like to buy it, but he'd want to see it first. Mm-hmm. So I arranged it that Keith would meet him from work, before he came home. The man said he'd be at that cafe on the New Warham Road, the Swan. It's only a little way from Keith's place, where he worked. So that's all. That's all I know. I never. She broke down there.
Yeah, and what happened?
Well, Potter drove out of work onto the New Warham Road.
Yeah.
Then he pulled onto the shoulder. He had a flat tyre. Rear offside wheel. He got out, and there was a nail in the tyre.
Uh-huh.
He opened the boot, probably, and the spare tyre was flat. Then he probably started walking back to his office. Nobody knows. He was found by a truck driver about 100 yards away from his car. Dead. He'd been hit hard and fast from behind, and neither the car, nor the driver, nor the man who phoned Mrs. Potter were ever found.
So, he... Just might have been hit by some speed merchant who was too scared to stop.
Or he might have been hit by a flying saucer that later kidnapped the man who was going to buy that car. He might, but he wasn't.
Did you talk to Mrs. Potter?
No. I thought I'd better not. It only happened a couple of months back, after all. I checked with her doctor, and he said she's still very upset.
Now, this was the night of the 20th of December, was it?
How did you know that?
Well, I've got Walter's report. Yeah, Potter's house was broken into that night while his widow was at the morgue.
Oh, the lousy, dirty
no,
swine.
No, not really, Tony. It had to be then. You see, Potter had a pretty heavy arsenal of anti-thief devices, from double locks to a shotgun.
But a burglar alarm...
No, he didn't have an alarm. No bells, nothing noisy, nothing connected to the local police station. Just as much protection as he could get, short of anything that would bring in the police if he was raided.
Very peculiar.
Oh, no, quite typical. Well, for a member of the Doubting Thomases. Rees has the same, so has Fielding, so has Donnelly, but... Not Appleby. Well, he doesn't even have a decent lock on his front door. But in most other ways,
Appleby's quite like the others. Now, listen to this. Five men, all 34 years old. All above average at school. Four of the five could have gone to university. None of them did. And until recently, when both Potter and Fielding started on the Open University, and... Appleby's done a degree course in ancient art by post, but he didn't bother to take the exams. Then, five bright, capable young men starting their careers. Rees went into his old man's garage. He runs it now. Potter was a salesman, then local sales manager. Then he stopped. He didn't get another promotion because he never applied for one. Donnelly. He went into his uncle's estate agent's business. The Hannaford office is a small branch office, but he never moved. And the same with Fielding. He stayed in the Hannaford branch of a bank and consistently turned down any chances of promotion to bigger banks in bigger towns.
An ambitious lot, aren't they? What about Appleby?
Oh, he never had a job at all. His father had been killed in the last war, and he got a small inheritance from him. His mother remarried and moved down south. He's managed to live on his inheritance ever since he left school. Spends his time playing the horses, quite carefully, and just hanging about. But then, another striking similarity. Not one of them has ever taken a holiday. Imagine that.
Well, I can't. I'd go crackers without a break.
Yeah, wouldn't you just? Even worse. Of these five eligible and apparently heterosexual bachelors, only Potter got married. A few weeks before he met his unfortunate accident. Oh. All the others live alone, not even with their parents. And they all stay put in the little town where they were born, like medieval peasants. And apparently with good reason. Because Keith Potter was planning to leave. He'd booked two tickets on a flight to Australia New Year's Eve. That's why he was selling his car. That's the mistake he made.
And that's why he's dead?
That's why he's in Hannaford Cemetery, where Philip Benton will be soon.
Oh. Well, it makes you glad you're you and not one of them, doesn't it?
Yeah. And they're all frightened of each other. Except Appleby. He's not frightened. Smith, yes?
This is Mr. Appleby's new friend calling.
Oh, you got him.
He's picking me up in a few minutes at 8 o'clock. We're going for dinner at the Water Gardens at New Warren.
Good. Now listen, Sue. Mm-hmm. You can tell him anything you want, but the one thing you must tell him is that we're bringing in Rees, Fielding and Donnelly tonight, and that I'm going to keep them here until they talk. Have you got that?
Yes. He's got quite a sexy voice on the phone, you know. Not like yours.
I'm glad to hear it. Tell Appleby that as well, but make sure he knows that the other three are going to be in my office for most of tonight.
Okay. If I don't manage to phone you later on, don't get jealous, will you? I might decide to ask him for a nightcap.
Do. And I'll bet you anything you like he won't accept. He's got more important things to worry about, so have I.
Oh, you. Don't be too sure about him, though. He was very quick to accept my invite for dinner.
Was he? Was he really?
Front door. That'll be him now.
Okay, but remember now, Sue, don't do anything I wouldn't do.
You're just jealous. Bye.
Bye. Maybe I am.
You might be. What?
Oh, nothing. That was Sue. Appleby's just called to pick her up for dinner in that flash place in New Warren. You know, 4,000 plastic water lilies and you chuck your tip into a pond and watch the waiters fight for it with the man-eating goldfish.
You two really do get on well together, don't you?
Yeah, like man and wife. What am I saying?
You tell me.
All right, I'll tell you. I want two good men in a good radio car to get out to the Water Gardens to watch Appleby without eating a five-course meal themselves. And I want them to go on watching him wherever he goes and whatever he does.
Uh-huh. You sound strikingly like a worried husband.
Shut up, Tony. Put Ogilvy and Parkinson onto this. They're good.
Right. What about the other three? You said you were going to bring them in.
Oh, that was a slip of the tongue. I meant you're going to bring them in. And keep them here long enough to give Appleby a chance and long enough for them to really worry.
Right. I'm on my way. What are you going to be doing?
Oh, I'm going to spend a quiet evening with Dr. Hartley.
Oh, you're trying to make Sue jealous, eh?
That's right. See you.
I'm going. But remember, the course of true love never did...
Get out!
I'm going. I've gone.
Oh, the course of true love, indeed. Still... Oh, come on, man. Come on. Work.
Hello? Eva Hartley here.
Dr. Hartley, hello. Yeah.
I've been looking forward to hearing from you all afternoon. You did say I might be useful, remember?
Yes, indeed. Dr. Hartley,
I want you to do something that I can't do. I want you to break the law.
What?
I want you to carry out a little search for archaeological evidence, a search that involves trespassing. Or, to be precise, breaking and entering. Hello, Dr. Hartley. Get in.
Oh, thank you. So, off we go, James. Drive me to the scene of my crime.
Well, first of all, here's a skeleton key.
Very apt name in the circumstances.
Now, listen, I'll drive you there and I'll bring you back. And I'll wait in the car about 50 yards from the house. But if anything goes wrong, I'm afraid you'll have to deal with it yourself, Dr. Hartley. You do understand that, don't you?
Oh, quite. Well, you're supposed to be preventing this kind of thing, after all.
Yeah. Are you quite sure you want to go through with it?
But of course. I haven't been so excited since I got my first metal detector.
Right. Off we go, then.
Mr. Donnelly.
Where are the others? You said the others were here.
Yes, sir. Mr. Reese is next door that side, and Mr. Fielding is next door the other side. And Mr. Smith won't keep you waiting a moment longer than necessary, sir.
But why isn't Appleby here?
Well, I don't know, sir. I just do what I'm told.
But haven't you got orders to bring him in? Isn't he being brought in?
Not that I know of, sir.
But then I...
Oh, don't upset yourself, Mr. Donnelly. Just make yourself at home. You might have to wait a little while, but all in a good cause, eh, sir? All right, Mr. Fielding, can I go now? I'm afraid not. Just a little while longer. Mr. Smith's been held up. But don't you worry. He'll be here before morning.
Listen, you don't understand.
Would you like to explain, then? Uh-huh. Just thought I'd tell you, Mr. Reese, we've got a bit of a hold-up at the moment, but it'll all be sorted out before the night's out, I hope.
But what about the others? Are they all here?
Oh, yes. Yes, indeed. All except Mr. Appleby.
What?
Oh, dear. Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Smith.
That's all right.
There you are.
Isn't this exciting? Oh, but I really am a little ancient for these tricks, I think. My heart's going bippity-bop, lickety-spit. Oh, my word.
Dr. Hartley, did you find anything?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, indeed.
Well, what?
A very delicate little funerary vase, Mr. Smith. Just about so big. Celtic. Probably 2nd or 3rd century. Could be a little later, but I doubt it.
What's it made of? Gold?
Oh, no, nothing so vulgar. Bronze.
Just bronze? Oh. Well, is it worth anything, then?
It's inlaid with enamel and coral. Quite superb craftsmanship. And quite perfect condition. Not even a scratch on it.
Good, but, what might it be worth, then? Quite a bit or not so much? I mean...
Well, now, let me see. I would imagine, Mr. Smith,
yeah,
that if you could deliver that little vase to one of the wealthier American or European museums,
yeah,
they would be willing to pay, perhaps $100,000 for it with no questions asked.
$100,000 for a little vase?
Well, you might get more if you were stubborn. And, of course, if it were auctioned and exported legally, the price would be significantly higher. But you would be most unlikely to be granted an export license, even if you were foolish enough to part with such a beautiful object just for money.
So, if that's just Potter's share of the loot, which I think it is, well, there must be three other things of the same value. One for Reese, one for Donnelly, and one for Fielding. $400,000. Oh, isn't greed a terrible thing?
Oh, it is indeed. Actually, if the others are like that vase, part of a set, I mean, then if they were sold as a set, they would fetch considerably more than they would as individual items.
More?
For the set, $500,000 would be something of a bargain price.
$500,000? Can you wonder Appleby's like he is, and the others?
Yes, that's no doubt why Appleby is holding on to his single vase.
But you say he couldn't sell it legally?
Probably not, because of the difficulties of obtaining an export license.
Oh.
Though that's not much of a problem, I'm afraid.
I regret to say that museums the world over are not nearly as scrupulous as one might wish when it comes to a really valuable acquisition. He could simply take them abroad in a briefcase and sell them the same day.
Yeah, but for the moment it's still in this country. And it is treasure trove, isn't it?
Oh, I'm afraid not. Not in England, as the law stands at the moment. It's not made of gold or silver. And it was not hidden, in the legal sense of the word.
No.
This was a burial object, you see. It was not secretly put into the earth as treasure. It was quite publicly buried as part of a religious ceremony. No, from the Sutton Hoo precedent, it would be the property of whoever owned the land it was found on. On, or in, or under.
Yeah, but it came from the burial vault on the Hannah Cliff. It was stolen from there.
I don't think we should be able to prove that. It did, oh, of course it did. But I doubt if one could prove that beyond all doubt in a court of law.
Oh, so Appleby could always claim he simply found it in his back garden, found them all in his back garden, and then he could sell them, legally or otherwise.
Yes. But unless he reported it to a coroner as soon as possible after finding it, then he would have committed an offence.
Oh.
Even if the coroner were to decide the vase was his property, failure to report the find immediately would be an offence.
Well, that's something. We can always threaten him with that, then. Now, Dr. Hartley, where does he keep the vase?
Now, that was interesting.
Yeah.
He has a small display room, partly a study and partly taken up with a display cabinet, rather like a little museum.
Yeah.
Four display cabinets, one containing the vase and the other three empty.
Waiting to be filled. Go on.
Well, that was rather odd, I thought. But equally interesting was the study part of the room. There was a library, a very specialised library, consisting entirely of museum catalogues and details of exhibitions and sales, and all of them concerned with antiquities. Catalogues from all over the world, and all dealing only with the period of the vase. He must be terrified that the others would manage to sell their shares.
Good, good. Was there any trouble getting into the display room?
It was even simpler than the front door. Oh, wait a minute. Here's your clever little key back.
Oh, thanks.
I only used it on the front door. The door to the display room wasn't even locked.
And no precautions or alarms inside?
None that I could see. Of course, I didn't try to touch the vase, much as I would have liked to. But I think I probably could have taken it and just walked out with it. And I was tempted.
What a confident man friend Appleby is. Alpha Orange 1.
Just to tell you, Appleby and Sue have left the water garden. They're heading back to town.
Thanks, Tony. See you. Out. Well, I think we'd better be going, Dr. Hartley. Would you like to come down to my office and follow this thing through to the end?
Oh, I think not, thank you. If you could just take me home, please. I've had more than enough excitement for one day. I need a large medicinal brandy and a good night's sleep.
Well, you certainly are. But I'm going to have a busy night. At least I hope I am.
Ah, the accomplice returns. Where's the cat burglar?
Oh, she's at home. Tucked up in bed with a bottle of brandy.
That's the best idea I've heard tonight. Oh, was your little trip worth it, then?
Oh, yes, yes. Appleby Esquire has got what I'm pretty certain was Keith Potter's share of the treasure.
What is it? Gold? Jewellery?
Oh, no, nothing vulgar like that. Just a little old pot worth about 40,000 quid.
Sheesh.
Yeah. Anything happened here?
No, try questioning them a bit, but, well, they're not a very chatty group of gents, really. Headquarters, yes?
Ah, Tony, Soggy. Appleby's just dropped the bird off. We're behind him, heading out towards his pad, okay?
Okay, thanks, Soggy. Stay with him.
Yeah, I suppose so. Yeah, I'll tell you what, though, Tony. I'd rather stay close to that bird. Oh, what handful, eh? Know what I mean? Who is she, eh? Might pop back there one spring evening.
Yeah, give me that. Hello, Ogilvy.
Yeah? Who's that?
Detective Sergeant Smith. Smithy, to you, Oggy.
Oh, yeah, well...
Now, listen. You just keep watching on Appleby and keep your mind on Appleby and stop boring us with your feeble fantasies about women, all right?
All right, sir... matter of fact, though, I'm not bothered about women. Just that one would do me. Did you know her?
Yes, I do know her. Well.
Message received. Over and out. Phew, did you hear that? Snappy old codger, isn't it? Oh, well. Sorry about that, sir. Thought I'd switched it off, and I hadn't. Yeah, I'll try again.
I'm not an old codger, am I?
No, no.
Of course I'm not. I'm a mature codger.
Yeah. Do you want to see the three? Rhys, Fielding and Donnelly?
Oh, no, no, not yet, Tony. Let them sweat it out a little longer. Let's wait and see what friend Appleby does. That's all we can do now, wait and see.
Yeah, and keep our fingers crossed. Yeah, hello?
It's me again, Oggy. Listen, it's quite cold here, you know. I mean, nothing's happening, and you know we're getting a bit, frozen solid.
What's he been doing?
Well, nothing. He put the car in the garage and he went inside the house and that's it. Nothing's happening except it's getting colder and colder.
Good. I hope you freeze, but stay there.
Oh, thank you, sir. Thank you and good night.
What time is it, Tony?
Just gone midnight.
Not good news. He really ought to be making a move by now. It's the best chance he's had for years. Mm. He must take it. He must.
Greetings, friendly Rogers.
Hey.
Oh, glad to see you, Miss Rogers. Won't you take a seat?
I will. Thank you kindly, officer. Thought I'd come and share the excitement. Don't mind, do you?
Sue, are you drunk?
Me? Drunk? No. Certainly not. No, no. Just floating a little bit. Had a super evening, though. Really, Appleby paid the bill, too. It's nice wine. It's a nice place, the water gardens. They have big goldfish in pools. Ponds, and fountains. Sprinkling...
Tony, get her a black coffee, will you?
And you?
If you're going anyway.
Huh. I wish I got out of flashy restaurants. Or any restaurants. I'm tired and I'm hungry.
Well, get yourself a donut.
Codger.
Did he say anything interesting, Appleby?
Oh, yes. He said he was full of sympathy for you, said he thought you had a very difficult job on your hands, and I told him you brought in Rees and Fielding and Donnelly. He was duly interested, but he said he couldn't bring himself to believe they could be murderers. He just didn't seem to have the nerve for it, he said, though he admitted you could never be sure. Each man is an island, he said.
Oh.
Looked me right in the eyes when he said it, too. Waxed quite poetical on the uncertainty of life in the modern world. He did. Oh. You still got the other three here?
Yep.
I bet they're worried little men.
Oh, they're not the only ones. I'm worried. Appleby dropped you off, went straight home, and hasn't left his house since.
Well, he didn't seem to be in any great hurry to get rid of me. Quite sociable he was. Friendly. Oh, don't worry. I think I prefer you of the two.
Oh, I'm flattered. Given me or a murderer, you choose me. That's very discerning.
So you do agree with my feminine intuition, after all, do you? You think it was him?
Well, I certainly can't see Rhys or Fielding or Donnelly having the nerve to kill Philip Benton. I agree with Appleby there. They've been stuck in here for hours now, and not one of them's even asked to see a solicitor. They're like sheep. And Appleby's the wolf.
It wasn't very wolfish with me.
Ah, because I'm afraid you're not what he wants, Sue. He wants that treasure, all of it.
You found some treasure?
Dr. Hartley did, not gold or silver. Don't get excited, just a little vase, but worth a lot of money.
Room service?
Lovely.
There you are.
Thanks, Tony.
Merci, garçon. You know, Tony, you could always get a job as a waiter at the water gardens.
I always fancied that.
Can you swim?
Big joke.
No donuts?
No, they sold them off to a construction company. Now, how's this for a sick joke? They say they'll have fresh ones in the morning. Anything fresh happened?
No, nothing so far. Oops. Spoke too soon. Hello?
It's Ogilvy.
Look, if you're going to start moaning about the cold again...
I'm not, sir. No, things are warming up here. Our friend just came out of the house and got the car out of the garage and drove away.
You're following him, are you?
Oh, yes, we're with him. I'll call back when we know where he's headed. Out.
So, he's on the move. The wolf is closing in.
You know, when I was a little girl, there used to be sheep on the hills behind where I lived. And once... I saw a dog chasing them. It wasn't a wolf, just an Alsatian. He chased them right along this hillside, and there they were, heading straight for a wall, with a big drop on the other side. And then suddenly, they all stopped running. One of them turned round, and he charged the dog. It wasn't even the biggest sheep, but it turned round and charged. And the dog ran away, with his tail between his legs.
Very good. What's she talking about?
Tony, listen. Bring those three little sheep in here, will you? Let's give them the good news. The wolf is moving in.
Okay.
Another time, when I was small,
I saw a cow chasing a bull. It was spring.
Sue,
hmm?
Stop talking. Stop trying to stay awake and either go to sleep or go away.
Eh? Well, suit yourself. Now, I'm not really tired, though. Hello. Hello, sheep. I count you in my sheep. Sheep.
Here we are, sir. Mr. Rees, Mr. Fielding and Mr. Donnelly.
Now, look, relax, relax. Just listen. Now, we know what this thing is all about. We know that none of you three murdered Philip Benton, but you know as well as I do who did kill him and why. At least one of you does, probably all three of you. And that makes you accomplices. It also makes you potential victims yourselves. Like Keith Potter. Now, you've kept quiet for a long, long time, and I've a damn good idea why. I know what you're trying to protect, trying to hang on to, but believe me, you can't win. You've got to choose between your shares of the treasure or your lives, your freedom, the chance to live ordinary human lives. Now, I'm going to give you the chance to tell me what you know. I promise you absolute protection if you talk. Mr. Rees. Mr. Donnelly. Mr. Fielding. Well, perhaps you'll think again when I tell you that Graham Appleby is out there now driving round and that none of your houses is protected.
Oh, fainted. Mr. Fielding. Mr. Fielding. Oh, listen. Listen, you can't do this. You can't do this to us. You can't. We didn't kill anybody. Truly, all we did...
Shut up, Fielding. Shut up.
Found your voices at last. Well?
We have nothing to say.
Nothing.
Fielding. Look, don't you understand?
Yeah?
Oggy, yeah?
What is it?
We've lost him.
What?
Well, he's driving a Mercedes. He took us out of town and then did a U-turn and shot back into town. We couldn't keep up with him.
Well, find him. Out. Oh, my God.
I shall personally make certain that Ogilvy never gets to be more than a lollipop man for the rest of his days.
I'd better send men out to watch their three houses, hadn't I?
Yeah, yeah. No, Tony, no. No, we'll do nothing. We'll just sit and wait.
But you can't do this.
Just watch me. I'm telling you now. I won't lift a finger to prevent your houses being burgled until they have been burgled unless you talk. Now. Well? Oh, who the hell's that?
Good evening. Evening.
Appleby? What?
I just thought I'd drop in, you know, saw a light in the window, thought you might be working late. Knew what a conscientious chap you are, you know. Ah, doesn't Miss Rogers look pretty asleep?
What do you want?
Oh, just a little chat. In confidence.
You better take him out, Tony.
Right. This way. Come on, this way.
Well? Well.
Oh, first of all, just a small point, but I do believe I was chased on the way here. Two very suspicious-looking men in a blue car. I did jot their registration number down, if you're interested.
I'm not.
Hmm. Well, what a practical little office you have here. No paintings, no carpets.
And no hidden microphones, either. Now, what do you want?
Well, really, I just thought I'd better give you a friendly warning. About Miss Rogers.
What about her?
Well, you probably don't know this, but we went out for a meal together this evening, and I'm afraid to say she did get a bit tiddly, became rather talkative, gossipy, you know, said things she probably didn't mean to say. So I thought I'd just let you know, no need to worry about me. I shan't breathe a word to anyone. You can rely on my discretion, Mr. Smith.
Thank you. Is that all?
Not quite, no. I was thinking on my way here how easy it seems to be burgled nowadays.
What?
I mean, I seem to have had an uninvited guest myself tonight. Someone entered my house while I was out with Miss Rogers.
Oh, I wonder why.
Yes, so do I. You see, nothing was stolen. Anyway, I thought I'd mention it to you.
Yes?
Nothing urgent, of course, but if you could perhaps look into the matter in the morning, I'd be grateful. Perhaps you could advise me what precautions I should take in future.
Right, I'll call in the morning.
Oh, good, good. Odd thing, really. Nothing being taken, actually. But then the intruder herself seems to have been rather unlike one's usual idea of a professional burglar. I look forward to seeing you tomorrow, then. Good night, Mr. Smith. Sleep well.
Oh, who's that? Is that...
Appleby. Appleby, yes. Presenting himself as the wolf in sheep's clothing. Oh, he's calm, I'll give him that. Calm and smooth like a stagnant pool. Tony. Tony!
Hmm?
Bring him through, the three sheep.
Okay.
Does this mean we've lost?
Yeah, I've got a nasty feeling it means just that.
Oh.
Ah, gentlemen. Mr. Appleby has just left. Now, for the last time, is any one of you willing to talk? You do realize your lives could be at stake. Right, you can go. Go on, see him out, Tony. See him out and shut the door behind him.
Come on, then, out you go.
You could still search their places. They'll be rushing home and checking they haven't been robbed. You could catch all three of them, red-handed.
Yeah, I could. But the most we could charge him with would be failure to report a valuable find to a coroner. It's not treasure trove, and they'd all do just what Appleby would do, swear blind they just happened to turn up one little vase each in his own back garden. No. No, it hasn't worked. Appleby didn't take the bait. So, there's nothing to do but go back to routine inquiries.
Which means you won't get him.
Probably, yes. Still. Come on, I'll take you home.
Right. I'm sorry it didn't work.
Yeah. Thanks, love.
Still, there's always tomorrow.
Oh, I'd rather not think about that. I've got to start tomorrow seeing that smug-faced fox, and he's really going to enjoy watching me pretend to investigate my own perjury. Oh, come on, come on.
Uh-huh. Doesn't even bother to lock his front door now.
Hey, up. It's been broken. Look. Come on, let's go in.
Seems quiet enough.
Yeah. Come on. Upstairs, the display room.
Ah. Here we are. So this is where it... Oh, my God. Look.
Oh.
Well, seen a few in my time. But...
Get Willoughby, Tony. Get Willoughby.
Right.
So, Appleby. The sheep turned, like Sue said. With a vengeance.
This man was beaten to death, John. Just beaten. And whoever did it went on attacking him, even after he was dead.
Oh, I'm not surprised, Willoughby. 20 years' anger and hatred went into that. At what time, roughly?
Oh, he's been dead about 8 hours. About 1 o'clock this morning. Not later than 2.
Oh, no.
What's wrong?
The men watching their houses had already left by 1 o'clock. I mean, it could have been any one of them. Reese, Donnelly or Fielding.
Oh, for what it's worth, there might well have been more than one attacker. You can see for yourself...
Yeah, well, the camera should tell us that.
The what?
The camera. There's a camera in here somewhere.
How do you know?
Oh, something Appleby said last night. Another of his hints. I was too tired to get it then. I was just getting me cornflakes this morning and I suddenly remembered. He said he had an intruder in here last night. And he said it couldn't have been a professional burglar because nothing was taken. But he said the intruder herself. Meaning he knew it was a woman, Dr. Hartley. And I think, Ah, there, look. Like a little eye in the wall. It must be triggered from the door. Open it up, Tony, there.
I can't quite Ah.
Well, let's have a look.
Here we are.
Oh, yes. Ah. See? Dear Miss Hartley. I must get that framed for an evening to remember. Well, he's even got a little time attachment. 9:27 p.m. 3373. And then there's Appleby coming in. 11:55 p.m. 3373. And then... Ah. Well, isn't that nice? 12:59 a.m. 4373. Three sheep.
So, it's all over except the trial.
Yep. And they were so relieved that it was finally over, the pressure was off, they've all made very full confessions. So the trial should be pretty much of a formality.
And then Philip Benton can be properly buried at last.
Aye. And four little Celtic vases can bring the tourists into Hannaford Museum.
And I can do my programme.
Oh.
But what I don't... Well, how could the others... How could they be so certain Appleby was the killer?
And not one of themselves?
Yes.
Oh, because they arranged it all. You see, Appleby was the leader of the Doubting Thomases. Not Keith Potter. He was another of the sheep. So, when they found the treasure, and when Philip Benton couldn't agree with the others that they should keep it secret, keep it for themselves, mm-hmm. Appleby threatened him that if he ever said anything to anybody about it, he'd kill him. Now, the others knew Appleby well enough to know he meant it. But Philip Benton wasn't scared of Appleby. He dropped out of the gang, and he seems to have spent a couple of days on his own trying to decide whether he should stay loyal to his friends or whether he should tell the police what had happened and what they found. Now, they'd kept the vases in the vault where they'd found them.
Yes.
Mainly because they couldn't agree on how to divide them. There were only four vases and five doubters. But then, with the possibility that Philip Benton would tell the police where the treasure was, Appleby decided he'd better take charge of the lot just for safekeeping. So the others got in there before him. They took one vase each. Appleby got nothing. And they all encouraged him to think Philip Benton had taken the lot. And then, the really dirty trick. They told Benton that if he did go and take the vases from the vault and hand them in to the police, they'd back him up against Appleby. And they told Appleby Benton was in the vault. Oh, Appleby caught him inside the vault. And presumably thought Benton had already taken the vases. He tried to force him to say where they were. There was a fight. And he killed Benton as he was trying to escape through the entrance tunnel. And then it dawned on him that it hadn't been Benton who dropped and tricked him. It was his own fellow doubters.
He put two and two together and made four. Oh, sorry.
That's right. And there was nothing he could do about it. He knew they had the vases, and they knew he'd killed Benton. So there was a very uneasy truce. A stalemate. And it lasted until Potter lost his nerve or his patience and tried to break out. And until Dr. Hartley found Philip Benton's remains.
But now, well, I've got to wait until after the trial.
What for?
Well, to do my programme.
Oh, never mind your programme.
What?
Well, there's plenty of time for that. You could go on honeymoon and still have time for that.
Is that a hint?
No. That's a proposal.
And now we have another programme in the occasional series, Real World. Tonight, The Doubting Thomases, with Sue Rogers.
Wind howls over the gaunt Hannah Cliff as it has howled for centuries. And below, the sea thrashes against the very old primeval rock as it too has thrashed for centuries.
And meanwhile, a girl weighed down by adjectives gabbles away
I'm
as she is gabbled away.
That bad, you are.
No,
awful.
And she's probably quite nice in real life. But, well, we don't want to listen to that, do we? I mean, I can guess what the end is going to be already. Can't you?
In The Doubting Thomases, the cast was as follows. Detective Sergeant John Smith, Alan Downer. Sue Rogers, Caroline John. Dr. Eva Hartley, Margot Boyd. Detective Constable Tony Lambert, Geoffrey Beavers. Mrs. Clark, Diana Bishop, Eric Benton and Huey Latchmer, Timothy Bateson, Graham Rees, Sam Dastor, Graham Appleby, Fraser Carr, Andrew Donnelly, William Slay, David Fielding and announcer Neville Jason, P.C. Ogilvy, David Timpson, and Dr. Willoughby, Rolf Lefebvre. The Doubting Thomases was written by Mike Stott and produced by Jerry Jones.